Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
This was literally one of those days, Sue, where I had to ask Fred. I said, wait, is today Wednesday or Thursday?
Oh, my gosh.
Qualify that question.
I asked the morning show that this morning. Yeah. It's how we are.
What, can you remind me, Fred? What did you say?
What did I say? Well, I know
what
it's
day
Wednesday.
Is it? It's Wednesday. Yep. Good. Excellent. Just confirming. We are a week from Santa's visit on Christmas Eve, aren't we?
So yes, we are.
We're getting very, very close. Hey, by the way, I know you're giving me trouble about my R&D that I'm doing on Christmas presents. I've bought like two presents now at this point.
Is that good?
I think so. I had a friend of ours who is a mom of a couple of friends of Alexa's. She texted me during the show yesterday and she said, hey, I'm not going to mention what this is. She said, hey, if you're looking for something for Christmas for Becky and Alexa, they both mentioned
blah,
this.
Blah.
You're right. And I said, that's awesome. Thank you. But what's this?
I did not know what it was either.
Oh, right. I told you what it was. Right. Yeah. So I have no. So I think that's like half a present. I haven't done anything yet. First of all, I don't know what it is. And second of all, I haven't purchased it yet. But, you know, I did get the...
Half of the battle is knowing what you're getting.
Thank you, Fred. Exactly. I don't know where to get it or how to... I think I got to order it online or something like that. But I'm working on that. So we got a lot of stuff that is... As so often is the case, moving pieces. We have a Brown University shooting update coming up. A little unusual because today's been a little different than yesterday. They've released another image. Let's see. I think this is starting right now. So let's go to this real quick and see what's going on here. This is live in Providence. And I believe this is the mayor of Providence right now.
Restless and eager for an arrest. And we understand and share that feeling. We are also eager for an arrest. The investigation is well underway, and we'll hear an update in just a second from Colonel Perez and Attorney General Nerona. But I want to reemphasize that in the Providence community and with the governor's help, really in the broader Providence community, we have tightened security and we have neighbors looking out for one another, and we will get through this. I know our city, and we are a resilient community. And we are a city that will support one another as we move forward in this scary time. Just because you're feeling unsafe doesn't mean that that's invalid. We know that that's real. But we are doing everything we can to both advance this investigation, but also to provide the support necessary as we move forward and take the first steps together that we need to as a city to start to recognize that kids need to go to school and people need to go to work, and we appreciate the courage and sometimes even tentative steps forward that we're taking as we start to move forward as a community. At this time, I'd like to introduce Colonel Oscar Perez.
That's Brett Smiley. He's the mayor of Providence, and he's doing those reassurances because there have been a lot of people that have said, wait a second, you're telling us that there is no threat that is in the community, but you still don't have this shooter at this point. And this is Oscar Perez, who is the police chief. Well, he stepped off the podium very quick there. I think he's going to show some video, so we may have to cut out of this at this point because they're basically going to show video. But what happened earlier today, Fred, is they released a second person of interest, and you can see this guy's face. He looks completely different than the first person, but they think that he may be associated, or they really don't even know, but they're looking for this person at the same time.
Let's
now
hear
as well.
What they call him.
Yep, yeah, but I don't know if they're actually going to narrate this. Let's see.
This is a person that we would like to speak with.
Okay, here we go.
I truly believe, based on the video footage that we have been watching for throughout a few days, that may have relevant information to the investigation. So we're asking the public that you can help us identify who this individual is, as well as the individual themselves sees their picture, to please contact the police department. As far as one thing that I want to mention, I want to urge you, the public, not to rely on or circulate AI-generated images that are currently being shared on social media, as they're not verified or credible. As well, the updates and information that you're getting will be provided exclusively through this department's official channels. I want to make sure that we make that happen, and please notify the public to make sure that that occurs.
So the images that they're showing right now, this guy, you can see his face much more clearly than the suspect from yesterday who was masked. Now, again, they're not saying that this is the shooter. They're saying they'd like to speak with this second person.
Of the area that we have been intensively walking on those streets, canvassing the area. So as you see the blue image, yesterday I mentioned that we need the public's assistance to check their camera assistance or any sort of video that you may have that could be helpful to us, that you, as you're watching it or as you're reviewing it, you feel there may be something that we can use. Please notify us. And if you need any help with that, viewing those videos, please also call us. We can come over and help you. The green area, that's color, that's when we have confirmed where the subject was prior to the shooting.
Oh, so he's describing a map right now. There's a big square area over the map, which is where they'd like to have, you know, some video. It's a pretty big area of the neighborhood that is, you know, right next to Brown University. And then the green area is where they've already attained some of the video that they're showing us at this point. That's a much smaller portion of these neighborhoods.
There's about 9 federal agencies that are assisting us with this investigation, adding the state police as well as the Providence police and other municipalities. Again, I would like to reiterate, if you have any tips, please call the 272-3121 or the FBI link at fbi.gov/Brown University shooting.
Okay, we'll see if they go to some questions here. But, Fred, doesn't this kind of tell you that they're not any closer to getting this person than they were yesterday?
It doesn't sound like it, right? No.
So that, you know, they put the map up there very quickly. Jacob Fry, who is the, I think his name is Smiley, who is the mayor of Providence, is back up there right now. I don't know if he's going to take questions or not.
First, I want to just take a moment to recognize and honor the memory of Ella Cook and Muhammad Aziz Umerzakov, who are the two deceased victims from this tragedy, and update you on the status of the survivors.
Okay, we're going to let them go at this point. We'll see if there's any more information. The whole situation is weird, and there's a lot of frustration with this. I've heard Paul Morrow again on Fox today, and he was on our show.
He's there today.
He is, and he's defending the investigators from this standpoint, saying, you know, and I think, Sue, you heard him yesterday, he offered the Brian Kohberger situation as an example, because it did look like at the beginning of that investigation that we were dealing with inefficient policing,
right,
the Keystone Cops, and then it kind of all came together. So, you know, maybe there's a chance that they know more. You would hope that they know more than they're saying right now.
Right.
But releasing that second image is weird, because no matter, let's say that guy's not the shooter, right? Maybe he has nothing to do with it at all, but he saw someone. You're plastering his face all over the world.
I know.
You're telling me that's not going to screw up that guy's life? I mean, if I'm the person that's just walking on campus and I have nothing to do with this, now maybe he does, right?
Maybe he does.
But I'm thinking, wow, that's pretty bold. Here's some frustrated folks.
I wouldn't say they've hit a dead end, but they just don't have any solid leads on the identification of the subject.
It appears as though, yeah, he may be scoping things out, but it's more so he's like buying time. He's almost waiting until
right.
he knows where he wants to go and what he wants to do.
He's engaging in that pre-attack surveillance, that right before, making sure it's a soft target, making sure there's no law enforcement in sight, and just rehearsing his attack right before he goes in that building and commits it.
It was the whole video from yesterday, and I've watched it. I've seen it so many times. It's weird because he's kind of just pacing around. If that's the guy,
right?
We don't even know if that's the guy. They don't know if that's the guy. Anyway, Brian Kilmeade's coming up. He'll have something to say about this here in a couple of minutes. We have Congressman Bob Onder at the bottom of the hour. There was a House vote today, sort of a test vote on some health care plans. He's wrapping up his first year in Congress already, which is kind of hard to believe. So he's going to join us a little bit later this hour. We got a lot of rain moving in tomorrow, and I thought we'd get update on the holiday forecast as we're getting closer. So Dave Murray will be with us after 4 o'clock this afternoon. Of course, we have a Wednesday edition of Sue's News, and Alex Rich joins us on a Wednesday afternoon. So he'll be here sharing some stories. Dwayne Patterson from HotAir.com and Frank Mealy will be with us at 5:30. He's great on politics, and he's written a column about health care and how we can fix it and what he thinks the plan should be. Senator Eric Schmidt was one of the privileged few that saw the double tap video today. I still still think, you know, you have Pete Hegseth. I don't think I played this audio from a couple of days ago, but he said, we're not releasing the full unedited video. I wish they would, personally, but you still have these competing versions of what happened and what, you know, what people saw. So Senator Schmidt, who was, I'm not sure which intelligence committee he's on, if it's just the Senate Intelligence or Senate Foreign Relations, but because of that, he had access to see the video today.
I think the Democrats ought to be ashamed of themselves at this point, continuing to peddle this lie. You got to remember, this started as a phony Washington Post story that was debunked by the New York Times, of all places, that Pete Hegseth had said, kill everybody as an order, which was thoroughly debunked. I saw the video. Admiral Bradley, or the admiral, was clearly within his ability to order those strikes. These are narco-terrorists. These folks were seeking to continue their efforts. They were seeking to continue their mission. And there was, I've also reviewed the 40-plus page legal justification for it, the legal memorandum. The president has been delegated by Congress the ability to declare terrorist organizations. He's done that. They're carrying out that mission.
So here is what he says he saw.
They're seeking to turn the boat back over. It was still floating. They knew there were other narco-terrorists in the area. They were seeking to join up with them. And so that effort was ongoing. And so consistent with the order to take these boats and the people who were seeking to poison Americans out, the order was given then again to take it out on the second strike. By the way, this is what this has happened for decades at this point with terrorists. When the first strike doesn't work and they're still active and they're still trying to accomplish their mission, they're taken out. So, again, this was all an effort, I think, by the Democrats to try to, an ongoing effort, I should say, to discredit Pete Hegseth. They didn't want him to be the Secretary of War in the first place. They're trying to discredit him. They should just come clean and say that their effort failed, because anybody that watches that video knows these folks were continuing their mission to deliver drugs and poison Americans.
So I'd like the chance to see that video for myself. I really would, because mainly because there's so much variety and diametrically opposed interpretation between what the Democrats said a couple of weeks ago, who were able to see that, and what Senator Schmidt and others. But I guess it's not going to be unclassified for the rest of us to see. That's what the war secretary said, Pete Hegseth, a couple of days ago. All right, we're off and running here on a pretty nice day before all the rain moves in. I mentioned Dave Murray's going to join us after 4 o'clock. Pretty nice today.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So that means a half day. Yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
Hey. It's going to be a really good speech. I was just in the Oval Office with the president discussing it. He's going to talk a lot about the accomplishments over the past 11 months, all that he's done to bring our country back to greatness, and all he continues to plan to do to continue delivering for the American people over the next 3 years.
Yeah, I wonder if the president's going to be full of Christmas cheer tonight when he delivers that address. Let's check in with Brian Kilmeade this afternoon. You heard him this morning on 97.1 FM Talk. He's the co-host of Fox and Friends, and he has his show on Sunday, which is called One Nation. Brian, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing good. Just doing good. How are you?
I'm good. What do you think about tonight? They've kind of kept it a little secret. It seems like it's going to piggyback a little bit off of the, you know, the campaign style speech that he had last week in Pennsylvania. What are your expectations?
Well, I mean, Oval Office usually don't ad lib much, but Trump is Trump. So I think they got to talk about things that have happened. Like we cut $600 billion off our deficit, and then we cut our trade deficit in half. And we have gas heading down. It could be $2.20 a nationwide on the average, even with all the taxes that California and these other Maryland and all these other high tax states. That could be. These are some good news, and the different things that are coming down in the grocery store. And he's going to talk about, well, this have I work to do, and this is what we can look forward to with the big beautiful bill of tax deductions and refunds. Okay. And then he says he's got a new announcement on the economy. Very curious about that.
Yes.
But the other story would be Venezuela, the direction. So he's going to, you know, he probably got a lot of that from Democrats. What do you guys want to do? What are you trying to do? When they got briefed yesterday on the Venezuelan drug boat hits. And he figured, let's just do this. Let's just do it before everyone goes away for a week. you know, and who knows, you know, what's going to happen next. Let's see if I can get the country's attention to focus on what 26 is going to be like and what the first and the last year has been like and what he inherited. So that's it. And I'm sure he will not bring up anything to do with, you know, I don't think this is the time to bring up Australia and other things, but I would not mind if he brought up, you know, the threat of Islamic extremism in our country, that we have to, we can't go to sleep on this.
Well,
especially if Brown ends up turning that direction.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. We know we had a little bit of a briefing here at the beginning of the hour. This is day five of the manhunt. They have new images of someone who is not masked, who just might be someone they want to talk to. Paul Morrow was on my show yesterday. He's been on with you guys regularly. He's sort of defended the investigators from the standpoint of maybe give them a little patience, that there's a lot of things to piece together. But this is rather unusual that we don't have someone within 5 days, and they don't seem to be, you know, even closer based on what I heard earlier this hour, Brian.
Well, look, I'm not saying it's easy to manhunt. As far as I know, I got to check my resume again. I've never hunted down somebody that killed somebody. I get it. But you should be on the same page with the attorney general, with the mayor, and with the police chief. You got to get that on the same page. And as we mentioned, I think we talked to, I'm not sure if we talked about this, but, you know, if you're going to say, hey, we got a description, you have a description, you have more video, yeah, it's going to be on the website. It's going to be on the website. Would it have been now? Well, yeah, we don't have it ready yet. We're going to have it on the website shortly. Don't come to a press conference if you don't have a picture of the suspect. You got to be kidding. And then when the police chief comes out yesterday and says, this picture's from the outside, he goes, no, it's from the inside. He goes, no, it's from the inside. He goes, no, it's from, we have pictures on the inside and outside. And then the attorney general just steps in front of the police chief and clarifies. That's a joke.
Yeah, so, they don't seem to
I know
be.
It's not easy, but you got to be able to get your act together.
Right. They're not on the same page. Let me go to Bondi Beach because, you know, I mentioned this yesterday, and one of the things with these international stories, this was horrific. And, you know, a lot of people died, and there were heroes, and one elderly guy who tried to wrestle the gun who was shot and killed with his wife. He had the other guy that managed to, you know, grab the long rifle away from one of the shooters. But what a horrifying day on Sunday. And, you know, look, the complaints, there's common ground here with America when you listen to the folks in Australia saying that these warning signs were ignored by a lot of, you know, not only Australian officials, but the media.
It's unbelievable. I mean, we can't go inside Australian politics, but just picture a left-wing government that just wants to be politically correct about everything and doesn't like Israel. Remember, they also are pushing for a two-state solution with no clue what that two states will look like. You know, call up Bill Clinton, he'll tell you about the two-state solution. He's more down on that than Netanyahu. So, and then to go ahead and go to the UN and scramble to do that, and what, you know, the Prime Minister of Israel said, we've been warning you, ultimately, we've given you specific examples of what they were looking to do inside your country, and you ignored it, you looked the other way. And now your answer is gun control? Really? We got to look at our gun control. Well, how about this? If you interview someone in 2019 and you think he's a terrorist, but you're not sure, how about don't let him get 6 guns? Because you deny everybody else in your country guns.
It's unbelievable.
But you don't deny this guy.
Right.
I mean, then we got to get to the bottom of that. Evidently, there's some reasons to get guns. And this guy had hunting, sport fishing, or whatever he did. So he was able to answer those questions. But in 2019, they thought he was a terrorist. But in 2026, you can give him anything he wants, along with his son.
Yeah, it's stunning, really. It really is. Brian Kilmeade with us this afternoon. So what did you make of the Susie Wiles piece? I spent quite a bit of time on this yesterday. I read the piece in Vanity Fair. Apparently, there's a second one coming. The biggest question I think that a lot of people on the conservative side have is, why would you agree to do this with Vanity Fair?
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
I mean, there were quotes. And it's not like they say, my impression of Susie Wiles is this. These are quotes. Now, so are some of them taken out of context, perhaps? But I actually think that's what you would say if I asked her and she wanted to be candid. So he did 11 interviews with this guy. And I know him. I think we might have both interviewed him on his book tour when he came through, and on the chief of staff. Did a pretty good job. But you could tell by the premise of the questions that she was not for his immigration policies. You could tell by the premise of the questions she was not, just by the tone, he was not for tariffs. But she says, you know, the tariffs were a little chaotic. She said that, Marco Rubio had to fix USAID, that basically Elon Musk was reckless and he's a one-man machine and he's on ketamine. Wow. All right. President's personality is like an alcoholic. The president goes, yeah, I admit it. I would be. If I drank, I'd have a problem. But he likes big risks and he has a lot of confidence in himself. So she would know that. So a lot of the stuff that came out wasn't salacious.
No.
It was what you heard. I mean, they should listen. The tariffs are coming out. It was more chaotic than I think the word she was. It was more chaotic than they thought. Was he advised to do it little by little, incrementally? He says, yeah, he was advised to, but he didn't do that. You know, and she said, my job is not to control him. My job is to run the White House. So that's why he likes her. And they have mutual respect. So when she does say things, it's like, hey, you know, I wouldn't do that. I'm not telling you not to do it, saying I wouldn't do that. You know me. You know I know you. So that's why she has to stay for 4 years.
Well, and I think that, you know, some of that and some of her, you know, the reason that she got this job does come through in that piece. I do think that some of those quotes without context are confusing. And then when you talk about the 11 interviews, they were done in a way where the way that Chris Whipple does his story is you see different days that might be defining days throughout the administration in the past year. And he focuses on those days and the quotes that she may have given on those particular days or maybe in the aftermath of whatever might have happened, like the tariffs, for example, in the spring. So the view might be a little different now than it would have been last year. The thing that I just have to go back to the place where I don't know if it was, you know, ego or just maybe trust in Chris Whipple, because you typically are not going to get something in a piece like or a magazine like Vanity Fair, Rolling Stone, or Esquire, any of those, that's going to be complimentary to conservatives. I mean, that's just kind of basic media 101.
I don't know why she said yes. I really don't, because, I mean, for example, I got to know her a little bit before, you know, before Trump won. And I have a house in Ponte Vedra, and so does she, lives there. And that's in the Jacksonville area. So I had a chance to talk to her before, and she would just tell me, you know, I'm not into publicity. I really don't want to do any publicity. So I called her up like 6 weeks ago, and I just said, hey, Susie, I'm just telling you that, you know, I saw you on a couple of times with a podcast. I saw you on with Laura. And she goes, listen, I would definitely do your show, except for they had to push me to do Larry Trump. The president personally asked me.
Oh, yeah.
The other one was something was set up before I took office. So I go, okay. And next thing you know, she does a year-long interview with Vanity Fair. And I don't know how it came to be. I guess we'll find out shortly. But I actually don't think it's that bad.
No, it's not.
You know, when they wrote about the chaos, remember Michael Wolff, when he wrote about the chaos and he just waited in the waiting room and watched all that chaos happen, and Bob Woodward kind of coaxed the president into trusting him and then blew him up. And then that's like, what were you thinking? Here, I read it and I go, okay, Pam Bondi did whiff on
the Epstein files.
She did
whiff
on the Epstein files.
Yeah.
So, you know, and she's done a lot of great things since. Now, do I expect an analyst to do that as opposed to the active chief of staff? Yes. But I read it and I go, well, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of true.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. But you would have thought, boy, it was like, and I knew this was going to be the case. I predicted this on the show yesterday afternoon. So I leave here and it's like an alternative universe. I turn Laura's show on. She's talking about Brown University. I flip Aaron Burnett on CNN and they are going nuts on the Susie Wiles piece and all the chaos. And this reaffirms how bad the White House is. So some of this is the interpretation by the legacy media, of course, as well. What's coming up? You got a few days until Sunday night show. You got anything special planned right before Christmas, Brian?
Yeah, well, I'm going to have Kevin O'Leary on to break down the practical economy, you know, about buying a house. What can we see? What's going to unjam this thing? What the big picture is. Also, the McDonald's CEO who came out and said, take responsibility for your own career.
Stop looking
at economic indicators.
Yeah.
So I want to get into that. Frank Luntz is going to join me and tell me how this year sets up. I thought it would be a perfect guest for tomorrow, for Sunday. And I'm going to do the how expensive is travel sports. We saw that subcommittee meeting yesterday. I'm fascinated by it. It's up 40%. Now, parents, if 70% of this country is living paycheck to paycheck and your kid is a good baseball player or is an aspiring soccer or volleyball player, now you got to come up with an extra $5,000 a year so your kid can play travel team at 13 years old. It's gotten out of control. So they had a subcommittee meeting on it. I think I'm going to tackle that subject.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so glad. That is a great topic. I was unfamiliar with the hearing yesterday, but I guarantee you there's a lot of people raising their hands in my audience right now saying, we agree with that, right?
Yeah. And then you got to, if you care about your kid, you get them a tutor if they're doing bad in school. Well, what if they're falling a little bit behind in sports? You got to go get them a trainer, someone to give them two skills, a hitting coach, a soccer coach, someone to teach them moves, unless you don't like your kid. So that's what they say, you know, you'll do anything for your kid. So you want him or her to make the travel team or to have high self-esteem. So write that check, right? Find that 24-year-old kid coming out of college and wants to make some extra money. So the pressure on parents just to keep up. So what? So the kid can hang out with other kids his age, let alone if they aspire to go play in college. There's so many different reasons. But it should be cheaper to play.
Absolutely.
So A-Rod said, I would not have been able to play baseball. I was a single-parent family. My family had absolutely no money. Tim Howard, the best goalie the U.S. ever had, said that I had a single-parent family. We basically couldn't afford to go away and stay in a hotel room. We had to stay in the car if I had a travel tournament. So that's those. So maybe our next great players can't afford to play, and that would be sad.
Yeah, that's a fascinating topic. I look forward to that. Of course, One Nation Sunday night at 8 p.m. Brian Kilmeade, have a great Christmas. I'm taking a couple of weeks off. I'm sure you're going to take a little time off. We'll talk in about 3 weeks.
Go get him.
All right,
Thanks
thank
so
you.
Much
Merry Christmas.
Have
take
a great
care.
Christmas.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So that means a half day. Yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes of network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
I feel I erred today in not making time to go hit some golf balls, because today was the day to do that. It is beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
We have rain moving in tomorrow, and then I think we got some temperatures that are somewhat comfortable leading up to Christmas. But we'll get a forecast update from Dave Murray after the top of the hour. I thought it'd be a good day to get him on to sort of preview the next week, since a lot of people are off. I feel like we're not quite into full holiday mode, but
no,
we're getting close.
Right on the cusp.
Yes, we are. Congressman Bob Onder is back with us this afternoon. He is in Washington working hard. You're not back in the district yet. You got some stuff to do. How are you, Bob, this afternoon?
Oh, I'm doing really well. The weather here in Washington's been kind of cold and nasty, so I look forward to getting home.
Well, what's happening in the House today? Sort of explain the procedure, because there's health care, you know, questions about these subsidies. There's a test vote that's going on tonight. So give us the update on what's going to happen here in the next few days before the Christmas break.
Yes, this evening we will be voting on the Affordable Health Care for All Americans Act, which is a compilation of several different health care bills that will bring down health care costs for all Americans, not just the 7 million who get these extended COVID subsidies that Democrats keep talking about. It does a number of things. It improves choice and competition with choice accounts and with the associated health plans. By fixing a flaw in Obamacare, it will, known as the cost share reduction program, it will lower Obamacare premiums by 11%. Expiration of the COVID enhanced subsidies only increases cost by 4%. So if you want to reduce health care costs in Obamacare and elsewhere, you would support our bill. And I hope some of my Democrat colleagues do so, although I'm not overly optimistic there.
Is the expectation that that does pass and go to the Senate or not? Because
yes.
This is where it gets a little difficult in kind of deciphering what you guys are doing, because I know that there's some Republicans, for Mike Lawler amongst them, that have kind of pulled back and they're voting for the subsidies. Are they members in the caucus that would also vote for this particular bill?
Yeah, with this bill, I think, is a strong bill, but we could do more in some of these areas. But the way this bill was compiled is that every one of these provisions has passed the House of Representatives previously on a bipartisan basis. So we should, I don't know that any Democrats are going to help us tonight, but I don't think there's any reason for any Republican to vote no on this bill tonight. Yeah, separately, what's going on is that four Republicans unfortunately joined all the Democrats in a discharge petition to force a vote on these enhanced COVID subsidies 2.5 years after COVID officially ended. It's the Hakeem Jeffries bill, the three-year extension of those subsidies that are just rife with fraud and abuse, and in which the Senate already rejected.
When we sit here in the audience, I want to make sure they understand, because it even gets confusing for me, Congressman. So when the signatures from those four Republicans, Mike Lawler, Brian Fitzpatrick, Rob Bresnahan, and Ryan McKenzie, that the way it's described in the media that I'm reading, it clinched a Democrat discharge position pushed by the minority leader, Hakeem Jeffries. As you mentioned, it's Hakeem's bill. So that actually does an end run around Johnson, and it requires a floor vote on the subsidies?
Yes. It does an end run. It is a Hakeem Jeffries bill. The discharge petition is a tool of the minority to subvert the not only Speaker Johnson, but the entire Republican conference. Basically four Republicans sided with the Democrats to support Hakeem Jeffries' bill. Probably an exercise in futility, because the Senate had already by a wide margin, 9 votes short, rejected this very same bill over there. But they want the vote, you know, and they were even offered this vote as long as they figured out a way to pay for, offset it by cost reductions to pay for it. Or if they accepted Hyde Amendment language to prevent taxpayers from being forced to fund abortion. And this little gang of moderates decided, no, they don't want any of those things. They rather side with the Democrats. It's pretty sad.
The better plan would be that the Jeffries bill is not going to pass, right? So why not offer Democrats should offer with Republicans to negotiate to see where they can find common ground in a bipartisan way to get this across the finish, because at this point, both sides aren't going to get their way unless they work together.
Yeah. I mean, look, I believe these COVID subsidies were a ridiculous Democrat way of expanding Obamacare, allegedly in the name of fighting a respiratory virus. It never made sense to me. They passed these enhanced subsidies in 21 and 22 without a single Republican vote. I think they need to expire. But yes, if I were one of these moderates, I would pursue the course of action you're outlining, which is see what you can get, see what you can negotiate with your Republican colleagues, with Republican leadership to get. But instead, they decided to go over to the other side and do Jeffrey's bidding. Yeah,
Congressman Bob Anders with us. See, one of the criticisms I've had of the Democrats going back to the Obamacare, initial beginnings was they, and this is happening again, Bob, to see if you agree with me, that they wanted to focus on that smaller percentage of people in this country who don't have health care, right? But they did it at their own peril, because they kind of ignored the 90% of people, the 95% of people who have health care through their employers. And in this particular situation, there's a Wall Street Journal piece this morning written by someone named Chris Pope that says that these Obamacare subsidies could kill your plan, because what he's arguing is that because this is focusing on 6% of Americans that are enrolled, not the rest of us who get, our health care through employers, so this might offer the companies that do the policies to employers an incentive to not offer up that coverage. So he's offering a warning sign saying, look, you extend these, this is going to be an incentive for the people who have insurance through their employers to be cut off. You have any thoughts on that?
Well, yes, Mark, that not only is that a warning, it's been going on now for a decade and a half ever since Obamacare was passed. A lot of employers of lower wage workers dumped their workers and their health insurance onto Medicaid, just plain old Medicaid. And yes, there are a lot of employers that have dumped their medium wage, middle class wage earners onto the Obamacare exchanges, including, amazingly, some blue cities like I believe Detroit and Chicago among them. So yes, this phenomenon of you're right, it's about 87-90% of us of the non-senior population in the United States, we get our insurance through our employers, and by and large, we're relatively happy with those plans. Yes, those are all in jeopardy, and they have been ever since the beginning of Obamacare, the Obamacare program.
Just do me a favor. When all this comes up, one of my biggest pet peeves when healthcare gets discussed is the Democrats, Bob. They love to talk about, you know, previous conditions and people not having coverage for that, and they need to be pre-existing conditions. They need to be reminded, and I believe it was 1997. It was either 1997 or 1998. There was federal legislation that was crafted, and it said you are not going to lose your coverage. If you don't gap your coverage, you're not losing your coverage for pre-existing conditions. But a lot of people still think it's cool to not have any health care until you get a bad disease, or then you need it, and you haven't paid for the insurance, and then all of a sudden you're expected to be covered. That's not the way the system works, and that's the way a lot of people and younger people, that's how they deal with this, which is one of the reasons we get into this crisis.
Yeah, but first of all, you know, and again, for the 90% of us covered by insurance through our employers, pre-existing conditions aren't an issue because you know that's the way employer-sponsored health insurance works. But I think it goes both ways. I think also younger, healthier people are opting in great numbers not to to buy insurance because it's just not affordable. You know, we were told you could keep your health plan if you like, according to Barack Obama. And we were told that the Obamacare exchanges would lower health care premiums. And Obama was very specific by an average of $2,500 a year. The very year that the Obamacare exchanges went into effect, premiums increased 48%. And since then, they've gone up another 98%. So if we need more affordable health care options, we need to be able to buy insurance through groups of employers, for that matter, I believe through Sam's or Costco, or if you and your neighbors want to put together an association health plan, I think you should be able to do it. Short-term health plans should be widely available, expanded HSAs, and then transparency so we know what things are going to cost when we go to a clinic or go to the emergency room.
It's the only place you don't know the prices, right? Even at the dentist, they outline the prices for you. You go to the doctor or the ER or anywhere else, the prices are a mystery until you get the bill, until the insurance company gets the bill.
Well, it really is, and that's really the essence of the affordability problem in medicine. I think when you know someone sprains their ankle and they think it might be broken, so they go to the ER, they really don't know whether it's going to cost them $500, $5,000, or $50,000.
No.
That's how obscene some of these hospital bills are. We need transparency in a bad way, absolutely.
Congressman Bob Onder, have a great Christmas. Keep us posted on all this.
Thank you, Mark. Right. Merry Christmas.
Take care. Christmas time in the air. We Three Kings from Los Straitjackets. I love these guys. Every once in a while, there's some vocals by Big Sandy. Is the guy's name? Do you know Big Sandy?
Well,
and the Flyright Boys.
Oh, you know them? I'm not sure.
Okay, Los Straitjackets performs in Mexican wrestling.
Well,
masks.
Yeah, they have toured with Nick Lowe, so I've seen them.
Yeah, they're great. Mm-hmm. It's real odd to interview. I interviewed them one time up at Summerfest in Milwaukee, and it's very odd to. They came in with their masks on, and they were kind of in character, and it was like not the best radio thing, if you know what I mean, because it's like a visual thing. But yeah, those guys are awesome, and I use them quite often at Christmas time. I am going to, you know, as we kind of lay out next week a little bit, Monday we're going to do some best ofs, Tuesday some best ofs, Wednesday we're not here because they're airing Annie's Christmas special, so we get the bonus day off. But in the 5 o'clock hour on Tuesday, which would be Christmas Eve, I'm going to spin some Christmas music. You might remember, Sue.
I do.
They allowed me to do this last year. I had a lot of fun with it, and I'll have to pick out some of the songs I played last year will be repeated because they're my favorite Christmas songs, but I'll come up with a few unique ones, and we'll do that on Tuesday because you might be able to say it about right now, but certainly after Friday, everyone's in a different mode with the holiday.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And listening habits are very different, and not as many people are working. So next week's going to be a little different, and then I'll be off from the 24th through the end of the year. We'll all be back together on the 5th of January. I start thinking about these things just in the future, like Alexa's birthday is in March. She'll turn 11 on March 8th. And, you know, realistically, when you start thinking about the calendar, that's not that far off.
No, it really isn't.
I mean, football's almost over, which makes me so sad. Not the postseason, but we only have three games left in the regular NFL season. We have college football playoff games this weekend. And you know how addicted I am to football. So
yes.
I get a little sad at the end of football season. But you know what? We have great baseball to look. Oh wait, we don't.
I am gonna go to Houston next month and eat at the restaurant
at Squabble.
Yes,
yeah, my son's restaurant. If you go down there, so it's not he doesn't own it. Mark Clayton is the guy who owns it. Evan is one of the cooks, and it was just picked as Houston Chronicle put out their list of the top 100 restaurants. Squabble came in at number 2.
And it's really good. I've gone before, but I look forward to going again.
It's in the Heights area. That's what they call it down there in Houston. That's where they live, which is kind of a fancy area, but lots of food and drink and stuff like that. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back with Dave Murray. A lot of rain in the forecast for tomorrow. What's the rest of the weekend into Christmas week holding? We'll find out from Brian. We'll have a Sue's News for Wednesday afternoon. Our friend Alex Rich is here on Wednesday as well. All coming up.
Get more at 971talk.com. If you have a podcast and want to monetize it, stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.